Okay, well, why don't we get started, everyone? Welcome, welcome. So you should be here for our exam prep session on the MCSE server infrastructure path for achieving your Microsoft Certified Solutions Expert credential. Just out of curiosity, how many of you have already achieved MCSA on Server 2012? So looks like about a third or so of the room. That's great, because that is the prerequisite for then tackling the MCSE exams on server infrastructure. So if you're not currently an MCSA on Server 2012, we do also have some other great exam prep sessions this week on those exams, the 410, 411, and 412 exams as well. So my name is Keith Mayer. I'm a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft, focused on Windows Server infrastructure and private cloud. And today we're going to be going through the MCSE track on server infrastructure. Later this afternoon, if you are interested in private cloud as well, we are delivering a session. I believe it's the last session of the day as an exam prep session on the MCSE private cloud path as well. And I had mentioned a little earlier that all of the decks that I'm presenting today are up on my blog for you to download. You can download them immediately after the session or during the session if you have internet access. So our objectives today, we've got 75 minutes together, and we're going to talk about two different certification exams that are advanced exams, right? So in 75 minutes, we can't hope to give you 10 days' worth of classroom knowledge and field experience and whatnot, but our target is to walk through the exams and the certifications and explain them, explain the structure, give you tips, and go through some practice questions to give you a feel for the exams, because the Microsoft exams are evolving. You know, if you haven't taken an exam in a while, anybody that hasn't taken an exam since like Server 2003 days or so, a few of you. So back in those days, the questions that were on the exams were very black or white type questions. Now you'll find that particularly in the advanced exams, there's a lot more scenario-based questions, and we'll be going through some of those scenario-based questions to give you a feel for it today as well. So one of the key takeaways is to identify areas that you need to target. We've organized the deck by the specific objectives for each exam. So as we go along in our discussions, if there's particular areas that you find, hey, you know what? I need to learn more about that area. Checkmark that area as you go along, and then go back. On each slide, I've given specific exam reference information that ties back to that objective area as well. That then becomes your action plan for a more structured study and prep experience for the remainder of this week. And if you get to the point where you're comfortable in tackling these exams, you can go straight across the hallway over to our exam registration area and register for a Prometric exam, for a certification exam at 50% off. So it's a great opportunity this week. Now, for these exams, the target audience are IT professionals that are designing, architecting, and implementing enterprise network environments using Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012. So that throws a lot of people, because a lot of people see server infrastructure in the title, and they believe that the exam is squarely focused only on Server 2012. But what the exam development teams found as they surveyed IT professionals like yourself out in the field is that in order to effectively design and manage large enterprise networks, management components are necessary as well, and that's certainly where System Center comes into play from our standpoint. So you might be thinking at this point, well, what's the difference between the MCSE server infrastructure track and that MCSE private cloud track that we talked about a few moments ago that we'll be doing that other exam prep session on? Really, both are MCSE tracks. Both focus on Windows Server and System Center. The difference is that this track focuses on more of a physical and kind of medium virtualized environment with Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012, whereas private cloud, that track focuses on a deeply virtualized environment where you're automating a lot of the components involved in deploying virtual machines, application workloads, virtualized networks, and whatnot. So kind of gives you a sense. You may want to think about which track you're going to target based on the environments that you work within. And you may find that you want to target both at some point because you work in both types of environments. So when we think about the MCSE, you know, actually the MCSE is back now, right? So it used to be the Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer several years back. Now it's the Microsoft Certified Solutions Expert. The expert role is intended to build on top of the associate level certifications to provide a certification for advanced professionals that often are geared towards designing and implementing and not necessarily the base level install and config tasks. So what you'll find is a lot of the base level MCSA certifications are around installing and configuring the basic components of a small to mid-size environment, where the MCSE path, that's focused around designing and implementing mid-size and larger enterprise environments. So being more of an architect on those project teams. There is also a Microsoft Certified Solutions Master designation, but it really doesn't fit today within the server infrastructure track. There's a directory services master that focuses on like huge Active Directory designs worldwide if you're in that kind of business, but it's currently in process of being developed for Server 2012. So currently, for Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012, the MCSE certification is the top of the pyramid for those two paths. So we talked about the MCSE versus MCSA certifications a little bit. We'll be targeting the one in the middle, server infrastructure. And once you've achieved your MCSA on Windows Server 2012, in order to continue on and achieve the server infrastructure MCSE credential, there's two additional exams that are necessary. The 70-413 exam on designing and implementing a server infrastructure, and the 414 exam on implementing advanced scenarios. Now, both of these are required, along with your MCSA, to achieve the server infrastructure MCSE credential. You can find the complete exam information online over at our Microsoft Learning certification site. And actually, the links that I've included here are links to what we call the exam objective domain areas. Those are particularly important areas to study and align your preparation to, because those are the specific areas that the exams will be testing on. So a lot of people, when they go into a certification exam, they ignore these objective domains, and they don't really know what the exam's going to be testing on. It's no mystery. What happens is Microsoft Learning works with IT pros throughout the world to assemble a set of specific objective domain areas based on the tasks that you perform every day, and those then get folded into the focus of the exams. So in the second portion of today's deck, we're going to be looking at each of those objective domain areas, talking about what technologies are involved, giving you some tips and some structured study information that you can use if you need to skill up in those areas a bit more deeply prior to attacking the exam. But these two links are great starting points for building your checklist of how you want to tackle getting ready for these exams. In addition, there are also some great online study materials that you can leverage as well. We've got the TechNet Library for Server 2012 and System Center 2012. And there's a free online Build Your Private Cloud training curriculum that's available as well with hands-on activities. Now, I know this isn't the private cloud certification track, but because of that integration of System Center 2012 into this track, that Build Your Private Cloud online resource is a great resource to get a little bit better exposure to System Center and get started in that area as well. In addition, there are some printed study materials. Certainly, there's Microsoft Official Curriculum instructor-led courses that you can take for both of these exams, the 2413 and 2414 classes, and there's also Microsoft Press exam reference books. Now, the exam reference book for 413 is currently out, and you can order that from O'Reilly, our authorized Microsoft Press distributor. The 414 exam reference book is not out yet. It's expected to be due out in October, and you'll be able to order it at that point. So depending on your timeline, these are additional great resources to have available. So let's talk a little bit about how the exam is formatted and structured for the MCSE server infrastructure. And we want to look at some of the question types. Now, certainly, some of you may have seen multiple choice questions as being kind of the key question type that a lot of our older exams used. And here's an example of one of those multiple choice questions where we have to pick one best answer Whenever you see the term best answer on an exam, you want to keep in mind that there may be multiple correct answers, but what it's looking for is the best answer that meets the requirements of that overall question. So this is one type of question. We also have the select all that apply type questions, and sometimes it's select all that apply in a particular order. But the specific new question types that the server infrastructure exams focus on are a little more complex, where they give you a set of actions that need to be performed, and you have to arrange them in particular orders and dismiss the actions that don't apply. They intentionally put distractors, actions in here in the list that don't apply to the scenario being described. So that becomes a little more complex than simply picking a correct answer out of the list. And the favorite one for the more advanced exams is what we call the scenario testlets. The scenario testlets give you a case study scenario that talks about a sample customer environment and gives you technical and business requirements as well as planned objectives. And then a series of questions follow after that case study that all relate back to the case study. So you have to do a lot of kind of back and forth. The way that I generally approach testlet scenarios is to skim through all of the information first, and then as you read the questions, you're able to go back in the exam and focus in on the particular aspects of that case study that make sense or are relevant for the questions being asked. So don't try to memorize everything up front. The other thing that I'll try to do with these testlets is a lot of times they're very heavy on giving you information in text format. And what I'll do is I'll use the card that they give as you enter the exam area to draw out an Active Directory and network infrastructure more visually. I'm a very visual person when I look at information and architectures and whatnot, and that helps me relate that information that's being provided in a text format better. So take advantage of the materials they provide you when you enter into the exam area to be able to help you understand and relate those aspects. So some of the exam tips that we have are, you know, pick a date and work towards that date. I've seen so many people say, yeah, I'm going to start studying and I'll take the exam when I'm ready. Guess what? We're never ready. As IT pros, we have growing mounds of paperwork and things that need to be done all day long. And if you don't pick a date and work towards it, you'll likely never get to the point of feeling comfortable. So pick the date first, then set your action plan to step towards that. During the exam, don't panic. Take your time. A lot of people are worried because the exams are time-based exams. Very few people actually run out of time in the exams. So you don't want to hurry through them. You do want to keep an eye on it to make sure that you're making good progress. And you can always go back and mark questions for review. Go back and review those questions at a later point in time. So for tough questions, that's a great option. Mark the question for review. Never leave the questions blank. Because if you do start skipping questions and leave them blank and say, I'm going to come back to these at some point, and you do run out of time, all of those blank questions will immediately be marked wrong. So just some good tips. Now for these particular exams, they're different from the MCSA exams, remember. MCSA is based on installing and configuring technical products and features around Windows Server 2012. These exams are focused on the design perspective. So when you're thinking through the questions, you probably already know a lot of the raw technologies, but you have to kind of put it together in terms of, here's what's being required and asked of me. How do these pieces, or which of these pieces, fit together to solve the problem being asked, or to best solve that problem being asked? So you want to think about things like, what are the prerequisites? What are the dependencies? What's the configuration that's required to reach that desired solution? So think about it from a design standpoint. And as we mentioned, they do kind of sneak in. They don't oftentimes mention overtly, hey, which System Center 2012 solution would you use? They sneak those in as possible answers. So they'll oftentimes ask a question, ask you to select the best answer, and then give you scenarios that offer up, hey, here's one way of doing it just with Windows Server 2012 out of the box. Here's another way of doing it with the system center components, for instance. So the key there with these exams is anytime you see some of the keywords like manage, optimize, design, virtualize, you want to think about system center components as well, because those are the areas that system center falls into. Protect is another good one to keep in mind from a system center standpoint. So those are some of the key areas, key ways of thinking about it. So let's take a look at a sample testlet scenario. We actually pulled from our Measure Up question bank. Measure Up is one of our sample test providers. A sample scenario that we can use throughout today's session for a number of questions. So we've got a fictitious organization, Company Limited. They're a manufacturing company in the US with over 3,000 users. They're in the process of migrating to Windows Server 2012. They've got a couple regional offices, a few branch offices. They're connected via 1 meg WAN links between the offices. They have manufacturing and admin in the regional offices, sales in the branch offices. Now, as you're reading through this, you might think, how much of this really applies to the questions they're going to be asking me? That's why you want to skim through this information up front. They may be adding in information that's just superfluous detail to confuse people that are not ready for the exam. So you want to skim through this. Generally, they'll provide multiple technical pages of information around Active Directory. So today, single AD forest. They have an AD site for each of the offices. They have child domains. They're going to add new domains. They're running on Server 2008. Functional levels, the DCs are all running Server 2008 R2 from an OS standpoint. So basic stuff. After Active Directory, they'll offer up information about the network infrastructure. So how what operating system the other servers are running, how they're leveraging a management infrastructure. In this case, we've got a little clue here that System Center is being added is already present in the management infrastructure, and Windows 7 Enterprise is running on each of the users' laptops. So when you see clues like that, you want to think about, well, when I'm reading these questions, what specific features of Enterprise, like direct access, like BitLocker, like AppLocker and whatnot, what are those specific features that are unique to the Enterprise SKU that might make part of a best answer versus an acceptable answer, right? So think about those clues as you're going through. They also have provided some details on the file server configuration, print server configuration, DNS, and whatnot. So that's the network infrastructure for our sample. Then they'll talk about, hey, here's some of the things that this organization wants to tackle. They have some plan changes for creating a new child domain. They want to have the DCs configured in a certain way, in this case with host zones and DNS. They want to make sure all the DCs are running Server 2012. They have client PCs that are going to be configured to use those DNS servers, so on and so forth. So pretty extensive case study information. Then they'll go into the technical requirements. So what are the technical requirements around group policy? What are the technical requirements around AD, around client management and server management and whatnot? So again, tip is skim through it and then come back as you're looking at each of those questions to focus in on the particular pieces of the scenario that make sense for those questions. So when we're thinking about the specific exams in the MCSE server infrastructure track, we've got two exams, as we mentioned, 413 and 414. What I've done in the deck is I've taken all of the objective domain areas and broken them down and then hyperlinked them through to the content that relates to each objective domain area. So there's separate slides that each of these link through to. We're going to step through those slides, as many of them as we can, as many sample questions as we can during our session today. But this is a great study resource as well, because as you're using the deck for preparing and studying, you can quickly jump to the areas that you need the most help with. So we've got 6 objective domains in the 413 exam. We've got 4 in the 414 exam. Let's start off with our first, planning and deploying a server infrastructure. Now this one, this first objective, confuses a lot of people, because when most people look at this initially, they think, oh, I know how to install and configure Windows servers. I can plan out how to do that installation and have no problem at all. Well, what they're focused on really behind this objective domain is helping to design an automated server installation strategy. How many of you currently automate your server installs in your environment today? So this is, I find, a big area. We only have a few that do that today. A big area that you need to focus in on. Now, while many of you don't automate your server installs, you may be automating your client installs and using some of the same common tools that can automate either client or server installs. Tools like the Windows deployment services, the assessment and deployment kit, and whatnot. So if you have familiarity with automating client installs, you can oftentimes apply that. But what they're really drilling into here is, how do I automate and standardize the installation strategy? How do I think about doing bare metal provisioning of my new servers? How do I think about the different types of images and how they apply to a server, thin or thick? So a lot of the same scenarios you'd think through for client imaging situations. So some of the tips to think about is, when you're going back and looking at those scenarios, analyze how many discrete different types of server roles there are. And use that to factor in, well, how many images? If I'm asked an automated server installation question, how many images or what types of images should I be setting up? Know each of the tools from a functional standpoint. So know Windows deployment services, know the assessment and deployment toolkit, know how System Center focuses in that. You don't need to know the details necessarily of every single command line option on those tools, but you need to know the functional capabilities of each of those tools for the exams. In addition to designing a physical automated server installation environment, they also have exam objective domains around designing a virtual server deployment as well. So if you're deploying Windows Server 2012 in a virtualized fashion, what tools can you use? So it has a little bit, understanding certainly of Hyper-V, but having an understanding of how System Center Virtual Machine Manager supports profiles, supports templates, supports the ability to automate and package components within those VM templates as well. When we're thinking about the next step after that, once we've got our server infrastructure automated, then the next step is, well, how do we plan the components that are going to help us roll that out? So we've got the images packaged. Now to deploy them, we use technologies like Windows Deployment Services, so WDS. And within WDS, with Server 2012, there are a couple new features to keep in mind. One of those big new features is that WDS in Server 2012 now can run in either an Active Directory integrated mode or a standalone mode. So if you're doing batch deployments of servers or client operating systems using WDS, you no longer need to install it through Active Directory integration only. You want to be comfortable with the normal configuration of WDS as well as multicast deployments as well. And from a System Center standpoint, know how System Center Config Manager can be used with distribution points and collections to deploy those operating system images as well. Once we've got the basics done for how we're going to deploy servers, then it comes down to the upgrade and migration strategy. So you want to be familiar in particular with this tool here, the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, the MAP Toolkit. Because from a design perspective, remember that's what this exam is targeting, design and planning, that's the primary tool that you'd use to assess your current environment and plan out how you're going to approach the upgrade and migration strategy. And there's some great guides for the actual tools to perform some pieces of this migration as well. So from an Active Directory migration standpoint, I would get really familiar with the ADMT 3.2 tool, the Active Directory migration tool, as well as some of the unique aspects of that tool. So is anybody familiar with ADMT 3.2? Has anybody tried to use it with Server 2012? And what's the issue that you found? Well, the main issues are that the ADMT 3.2 tool doesn't run on Server 2012. You have to install it on a Server 2008 or 2008 R2 box from your migration machine to run it. It's also not currently supporting a source Windows Server 2012 domain environment or target environment. So you need to do your Active Directory migration first, get Active Directory the way you want, and then think about upgrading to Server 2012 for those domain controllers. So some good tips from that standpoint. So let's talk about a sample question that we can use to kind of target this area together. So thinking back to as much of that scenario as you can remember, so we're planning to migrate the sales.company.com Active Directory domain, and it's asking us which tool should we select. Now, I'll just refresh your memory because it's been a few slides since we went through the case study that we had an Active Directory migration as a technical requirement, as well as a group policy migration as a technical requirement to be able to bring our group policies over to the migrated domains. So we've got four possible answers. We've got ADMT 3.2 and GPMC. We've got ADFS and a Federation Gateway. We've got ADMT 3.2 and ADFS. And we've got ADLDS and GPMC. So which answer do you think is the correct or best answer? A, you think it's A? Yep, you're right. So the Active Directory Migration Tool and the Group Policy Management Console. Now, in the Group Policy Management Console, one of the other pieces with Server 2012 that you'll want to keep in mind is there is some new functionality that's very useful during a group policy migration. There's a new infrastructure status reporting capability. So that infrastructure status reporting is key because you can run that pre and post migration of your group policies, and it'll do a checkpoint of your domain controllers, the sysvol, your group policy permissions, your Active Directory objects and whatnot to make sure that your domain controllers are online, they're up to date, and it can see everything. So another thing to keep in mind from a tip standpoint as you're going through. So now we move on to planning and deploying virtual machine manager services. So this is another objective area under that server installation objective domain. We're getting into System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager here. And so out of all the System Center products, what you'll find is that the tests generally focus most heavily from a technical detail standpoint when it gets to Virtual Machine Manager, because Virtual Machine Manager is the component of System Center that's closest to deploying and managing virtualized environments. The other components are around automation and monitoring and protection of those environments. So you'll find the deepest technical questions around Virtual Machine Manager. That means when you're studying System Center, I would suggest you spend about 50% of your time just with the Virtual Machine Manager component. Get really solid on that component. And then go through and understand the functional aspects and the integration aspects of the other components as well. But don't go down to the deep technical level of knowing how to build out a config manager environment, an ops manager environment, and whatnot for the purposes of this exam. You definitely want to do that with Virtual Machine Manager, though. Specifically with Virtual Machine Manager, what you want to focus on are looking at how image templates are set up, VM templates, operating system images, and whatnot, how services and service application templates can be provisioned, and how to manage logical networks, the networks that virtual machines will be connecting to. Now, this last area around logical networks is an area to consider because of the new features that are in System Center 2012 Service Pack 1 and the R2 releases. Remember, the exam is on RTM code only. So when you're thinking about the logical networking piece, don't get confused with the new capabilities that are in SP1 or R2. The test is going to be focusing on the RTM base level capabilities. In the RTM release, the good news is that logical networking was pretty straightforward and pretty easy. SP1 added a lot of new capabilities, and with those new capabilities came some additional complexity. So things to keep in mind from that standpoint. After it goes through the process of looking at planning and deploying the operating systems, the next step is it's going to talk about some key services. So planning file and storage services, for instance. And in this area, a couple of the key areas that I'd focus on is planning iSCSI support, because we've got the iSCSI target now integrated into Server 2012. Planning NFS support, because we've got an updated version of the NFS server role built into Server 2012 that can actually serve up storage remotely to Linux, Unix, VMware host environments. And also, looking at the new capabilities in place with our storage spaces and storage pooling. specifically going through and understanding what disk types are supported. So SAS, SATA, USB, iSCSI are supported, and which are supported in a clustered environment. Only SAS disk types are supported with storage spaces in a clustered environment. You also want to go through, I would encourage you to walk through the process of enabling and understanding data deduplication. So data deduplication is built in to Server 2012 on any NTFS volume. So you can take a standard NTFS volume, enable data deduplication. Does anyone know what types of files data deduplication is really recommended for? Or what types it's not? So data deduplication is primarily gauged, positioned towards deduping document-oriented files. So if you have big files like Exchange databases, SQL databases, or virtual machine hard disk files that are always open and running, data deduplication can't be used for those. So it's a good tip to keep in mind that if you see a question on, hey, you're trying to save some disk space on where your virtual machines are stored or where your SQL databases are stored, data deduplication would not be the answer there. Instead, you might think about some of the other storage spaces capabilities like thin and trim provisioning that do support some level of disk savings and disk management capabilities for those other scenarios. So when we're thinking about the file and storage services, we mentioned the iSCSI support a little bit. So we want to definitely understand the process for configuring an iSCSI target server. And we also want to think about the different storage scenarios you may be involved with across SAN, DAS, and NAS scenarios. So think about, you know, from a SAN standpoint, that's going to be traditional iSCSI and fiber channel solutions. From a direct attached storage standpoint, typically that's disks that are directly attached to a single server. But the thing that you don't want to throw you is that with storage spaces, we can create storage spaces that span multiple servers in a clustered environment using clustered shared volumes, but they're still considered direct attached storage because they're not connecting to the server via iSCSI or fiber channel. They're connecting via direct SAS connectivity at that point. So when you see the term direct attached storage, don't think about just traditional direct attached storage in those questions. Think about storage spaces as well. So, sample question. So we're evaluating data deduplication for our planned Windows Server 2012 file servers. All the servers will have identically configured volumes, configured to this based on our case study, C, D, E, and F. So on which of those volumes should we enable, or could we enable, data deduplication? B, which is D colon, right? NTFS, right. That's because as you go through your studies, you'll find that data deduplication is not supported on operating system or boot disks. It's not supported on cluster shared volumes. And it's not supported on FAT32. It's only supported on NTFS today. So great, great. The other piece that you want to keep in mind from a data dedupe standpoint is that there is a free tool. It's a command line tool that's automatically installed when you add the data deduplication role for planning the projected amount of disk space that you can save through data deduplication. That tool, that command line tool, is called ddpeval.exe. So ddpeval, keep that in mind. In case you see it pop up anywhere, you'll know what that tool is for. So that goes through planning and deploying a server infrastructure. The next area is, I find, not as intense for people that were previously certified on Server 2008 or Server 2003, because it's around designing network infrastructure services. And so there's a lot of commonality around DNS and DHCP. There are some new features, though, and capabilities that you want to keep in mind. So from a name resolution standpoint, we're targeting DNS. And if you have a base level understanding of how DNS operates in an Active Directory integrated mode and how it can be designed across a multi-site network environment, you should be fine from that standpoint. There's a couple of things that I would make sure you understand around DNS, though. Make sure you have a solid understanding of how DNS forwarding and conditional forwarding works, how stub zones work, and how zone replication can be implemented in both an Active Directory integrated manner as well as an Active Directory, a non-Active Directory integrated manner as well. In addition, from a DNS standpoint, you want to make sure that you have an understanding of how IPv6 addresses are registered in DNS using a quad A record instead of a single A record, and what the ideas are, what the scenarios are around using a single label DNS name for resolution. Generally, it's going to be when you're migrating WINS, older WINS, NetBIOS name resolution, over to DNS. A single label DNS zone allows you to have DNS resolution of host names that don't have any parent DNS domain namespace attached to them. From a DHCP standpoint, similarly, DHCP has been DHCP for quite a while. It doesn't largely change that much from a planning standpoint. However, some areas that you may not have set up in the past are DHCP integration with IPv6. So when you're setting up DHCP integration with IPv6, some of the things to keep in mind is there's two general ways to set that up. Does anybody know what the two general ways are for setting up IPv6 in DHCP? Over here? Exactly. Yep, stateful and stateless. So the difference between those two is stateful DHCP v6, basically you're treating DHCP much like you would in an IPv4 world, where you're registering a pool of IPv6 addresses that are handed out along with all of your other DHCP scope options. Whereas stateless, basically, the clients figure out their own IPv6 address from the network infrastructure and routing advertisements and whatnot. And the only thing the DHCP server is delivering is scope option information. So keep in mind the difference between stateful versus stateless, because that's important as well. The other piece that you want to take a preview through is the PowerShell commands that are used for migrating DHCP from an older environment to the newer environment, from a 2008 environment to a 2012 environment. So there's a set of PowerShell commands that are included with the server migration toolkit. It's a free download from the TechNet site that you can leverage for migrating all of your scope information. I would walk through the DHCP migration guide and understand how those tools work for migrating DHCP. One area that you want to spend a little bit of time on from a DHCP server configuration standpoint that's new is this area of DHCP failover. It's a new feature with Windows Server 2012 to provide high availability of standalone DHCP servers, non-clustered DHCP servers. It provides both load balancing as well as failover capabilities as options. And there's a great guide out on the TechNet site that steps through configuring DHCP load balancing and failover in a test lab environment. I mean, let's face it, with a lot of these more advanced scenarios, the best way that you're going to prepare for the exam is step through the process of building it and then tear it down and step through the process of building it again, right? And then break it and troubleshoot it, or have someone else break it and have you troubleshoot it. So some good options from that standpoint to really get well grounded in these areas. Another new capability of Server 2012 is the capability around IP address management, or IPAM support. Has anybody used IPAM yet in Server 2012? Yep. What does IPAM do? Yep, definitely. So for those of you that may not have heard, so IPAM is a centralized way of managing IP address information, whether it's statically assigned address ranges, DHCP server information, scope information, and leased pool information, or DNS information across a multi-subnet environment. So it's a new tool that sits on top of, essentially, your DHCP, DNS, and typical IP management tools and centralizes all of that into Server Manager. So when you think about, questions that involve DHCP from a configuration, an auditing, a monitoring, a reporting, DNS from a reporting standpoint, when you start seeing terms like you want to be able to centralize this in your environment across multiple locations, what they're really getting at is IPAM is that central capability. So we need to recommend a solution for DHCP logging. The solution must meet the technical requirements. Which tool would we select? So one of the technical requirements is that we had to have centralized auditing in our environment. And while we can use tools like Event Viewer or audit logging or go into our DHCP management console or whatnot, what they're really getting at here is, anybody? B, IPAM, right? IP address management. Great. Okay, so that's network infrastructure services. Network access services gets into VPN and network policy support. So for VPN support, again, a lot of this is not new from a Server 2012 standpoint. We still support our RAS capabilities of doing site-to-site and client-to-site VPNs with the same tunneling and authentication methods and whatnot. The pieces that I would concentrate on, if you're familiar with Server 2008, are the pieces around direct access. Direct access has been substantially improved from an ease of deployment standpoint with Server 2012. The other piece to keep in mind is that whether you're deploying direct access or a traditional VPN solution, you have a unified remote management console now that's integrated into Server Manager that manages both of those VPN or direct access remote use configurations. So you want to keep in mind, you know, focus on direct access. If you need to brush up on the traditional VPN stuff, do so. But also be sure to step through that new unified remote access console, because that's important for fleshing out your designed environment. It allows you to very easily set up a quick, like, single server environment, but then you use the remote access unified management console to add additional direct access servers, DNS 64, NAT 64 servers, additional application servers and whatnot. You also want to take a look at the migration guide for migrating from Forefront UAG, which in the 2008 R2 and prior environments was an additional component that was required to scale direct access out in large environments. You want to look at the migration steps for migrating from UAG to direct access in Server 2012. In Server 2012, we no longer need to have UAG. All of the components for implementing an enterprise direct access solution are built into the box. So we talked about the traditional remote access stuff. Some of the pieces that, although it hasn't changed that much, that you may not have implemented in the past is make sure that you know how network load balancing works with direct access traditional VPN support. That's an important piece for the test. And we also want to look at the network policy server and access protection support. So know the roles for your network policy servers, for your health agents, for your NAP components, your certificate authorities and whatnot that are used for setting up NPS and NAP in a direct access or client VPN environment. For this area, I would take the approach of understanding the functional requirements and the basic configuration of each of these and not dive in too much into the heavy details. You can get ground up for weeks just in this area if you dive down into the details. So just a base level understanding of how this works will be sufficient. So the specific NAP enforcement methods that you want to make sure you understand around IPsec, VPN, DHCP, and then 802.1x for using NAP inside of a corporate environment are important, and design considerations. So I would spend most of my time, after you understand the functional aspects of NPS, in the design document, looking at what's involved from when do I make certain design decisions from a capacity, a high availability, a security, or a health remediation standpoint. So there's a great design considerations document out on TechNet that you can leverage as part of that prep process. Okay, so sample question. So we need to recommend remote access solutions that meet the VPN requirements of our scenario. which solutions would we recommend? It says choose the two best solutions. So we've got A, routing, B, network policy server, C, direct access, or D, VPN. Now, before we answer, one of the things that you may have picked up in the scenario is that we've got Windows 7 Enterprise clients that all of our users are using, but one of the other pieces, the technical requirements of that scenario, is that users also need to connect from home PCs occasionally into the corporate network. So based on that, which two answers would you guys select? C and D, yep. Direct access and VPN. So one of the pieces that you'll find about direct access is that it's a remote access capability that first requires the Windows Enterprise SKUs, so Windows 7 or Windows 8 Enterprise, and it rolls out and is intended for managed client devices that are part of your Active Directory infrastructure. If you have home PC users or unmanaged PC users or PCs that are not running those versions of Windows client, you'll still need to support the traditional VPN support as well. Okay. So we've gone through the first three objective areas. The last two are focused around Active Directory. So designing an Active Directory logical infrastructure and designing a physical infrastructure. And again, a lot of these haven't changed since the 2008 days, so I'm going to call out the specific features that I would keep in mind from a 2012 perspective. Certainly all of this information is available for you when you download the deck, if you need to skill up a little bit more on the foundational aspects of Active Directory. So as you're looking at Active Directory design and planning, you know, the basics from a design and planning standpoint, I'm sure a lot of you have a good comfort level with, because you probably did that for 2008. However, you may not have gone through a forest and domain restructure. So while that information is not new, the exam does have that as one of the focus areas within the objective domains. So I would make sure that you spend some time knowing how that process works and knowing some of the specific tools, like the rename domain tool, the rep admin tool that can be used for monitoring replication between your domain controllers, and the GP fixup tool that's very important after you have a migrated domain to fix up the group policy information between the old domain and the new domain. One other piece that I had listed there is knowing how to configure a Kerberos Realm Trust. So that's an area that I don't see many people getting involved with, but it is part of the exam objectives. Does anyone know what a Kerberos Realm Trust would be used for? For mixed authentication? For authenticating to non-Windows Active Directory, for trusting authentication to non-Windows Active Directory environments. So if you had maybe Linux or Unix or whatnot in your environment and you wanted to establish a Kerberos trust to an authenticator within those environments, that's what the Kerberos Realm Trust would be used for. It sounds really complex. It's not that difficult. It's just another option that you select when you're building your trust in the Active Directory Domains and Trusts tool. But something to keep in mind so that it doesn't hang you up from that standpoint. Designing a group policy strategy is another component of this. And from a group policy perspective, you'll want to make sure that you focus in on spending some time on some of the new features that Server 2012 provides around group policy. We talked about one of them already a little earlier, the infrastructure status reporting for group policies. But the new version of GPMC also has the ability to do remote group policy updates, to force a remote group policy update to a set of client computers within an organizational unit of Active Directory. So explore that process. And the reason you want to explore it is that there's some Windows firewall ports that need to be opened through group policy for that to work. So as part of your group policy design and planning, you want to make sure that you're planning for those aspects of Windows Firewall as well, to make sure that the appropriate firewall rules are in place and being deployed through group policy. From an Active Directory permissions model standpoint, again, not a lot of new information, but it does focus on centralized and decentralized administration models. And I brought that out because what I found is that based on the environment that you're in, you probably long ago chose either a centralized or a decentralized strategy largely for delegating within Active Directory. And you may have forgotten what the process was for deciding which direction you went during that process long ago. You want to revisit that information and make sure that you have well established in your mind when to choose a centralized strategy and when to choose a decentralized strategy based on the requirements around how the WAN is, how the WAN infrastructure between sites is architected, what the security and administrative requirements are. So go back through those steps and make sure that when you get into the exam and you start having questions on centralized versus decentralized, that you have all of those points well understood. Okay, so a sample question. So we've got a need. We need to recommend a management solution for group policy. And the solution must meet the technical requirements. Which solution would we prefer? So as we're looking through these answers, we've got several answers, many of which are extra components outside of Windows Server 2012. We've got Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack, System Center Ops Manager, System Center Config Manager, the Baseline Security Analyzer. One of the technical requirements was to have, back in our case study, as we look back in that case study, was to have centralized auditing of group policy changes. Based on that, anybody have a guess on, as to which answer this might be? A, yep, so A, the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. So inside the Desktop Optimization Pack, there's a component called the Advanced Group Policy Management Component. You want to make sure that you go through the document in the MDOP kit that relates to that specific component so that you have an understanding as to all the features that that provides over and above the base support by the Group Policy Management Console. The other piece I would familiarize yourself with is the new PowerShell commandlets that are available now in Server 2012 for managing and deploying group policies. Okay, so from a physical infrastructure standpoint, this is a quick one before we get into 414. So we've got sites and replication topologies to keep in mind. Again, a lot of this is still the same as it was in the 2008 days, but you might need to go back and refresh how Active Directory sites work. You know, make sure you have a solid understanding of the Active Directory sites and services tools, how sites are represented inside DNS. So those are all important things, as well as the tools that you use for troubleshooting Active Directory replication between sites. So RepAdmin and DCDiag being a couple of those tools that you want to make sure you understand. One of the areas that you may not have spent a lot of time on, but you'll want to visit for the exam, is when you're thinking about your domain controller strategies, in terms of thinking about them from a branch office perspective, because a lot of the scenarios are going to be multi-site scenarios that include branch offices. And in particular, looking at read-only domain controllers as how they fit into that branch office scenario to be a domain controller that receives a partial attribute set of your Active Directory objects for authentication purposes and read purposes only. So in a branch office, that provides some great security and bandwidth benefits by not having to replicate everything down to your branch office DCs and not having to worry about every branch office DC having a full copy of Active Directory. In addition, in Server 2012, if you're using Server 2012 Hyper-V and Server 2012 as your domain controllers, we also now have built-in support for domain controller virtualization and cloning. So you want to make sure that you understand that process. There's a new capability built into Server 2012 called VM Generation ID. And what that gives us is the ability to safely virtualize domain controllers on top of Hyper-V in Server 2012, even if there's snapshot or VM rollback operations that occur. The domain controller knows how to self-repair itself. From a deployment standpoint, it also gives us the ability to clone domain controllers. when we're deploying new DCs, instead of having to build a member server and promote it to a DC and replicate to it, we can take an existing DC and clone it as a new VM. So you want to understand those two pieces because they are new. And from a branch office infrastructure perspective, you know, certainly the read-only domain controllers are part of that. But if you haven't, if you don't have any branch offices in your environment where you've done this planning already, you may want to look at some of the other capabilities, specifically universal group membership caching and branch cache. Branch cache, keep in mind, is another feature that requires the Windows client enterprise SKU to take advantage of. Does anyone know what branch cache does? In the back?
Basically, when you have remote offices, you have a small pipe and you need to pull resources from the central location. The first machine, the first workstation that gets the resource keeps a local cache. So when another machine on the same side needs the resource, it doesn't have to pull all of the pipe to the central location. It can pull it from the local site. And it can even
exactly. Yeah. So what branch cache provides is the ability to have centralized content servers. They could be file servers or web servers, and enable the branch cache role in the central location, the central data center location, as well as on at least one server in your branch office location. As Windows 7 Enterprise or Windows 8 Enterprise clients attempt to access that central content, they'll first do a comparison of block IDs back and forth and only download across the wide area link the new blocks of data that had not been previously cached. Those blocks will then be sent over to the server at the branch office that has branch cache enabled as your hosted cache server for other clients. There is also a distributed cache mode if you have branch offices that have no clients running at them. So there's a great branch cache design and implementation guide out on TechNet that I'd encourage you to read through to have an understanding of. Remember that it does require the enterprise SKU, though. But it can be a, particularly if you see scenarios around having slow WAN links and the need to centralize the management of content, if they're running Windows 7 or Windows 8 Enterprise in those scenarios, branch cache can be a great solution for those areas. Okay, so here's a kind of a foundational Active Directory question to give you a sense as to, you know, do you need to go back and maybe rethink about how Active Directory works from a site-to-site replication standpoint and study that a little bit more. So we said we need to recommend changes to the AD site topology to support the company's plan changes. Now, one of the plan changes that we had is that the company is introducing IPv6 into their environment. They had IPv6 turned off before. They're going to be introducing IPv6 into their environments. So what should we include in our recommendations? So we've got A, a new site link bridge, B, a new site link, C, a new subnet, or D, a new site. C? Did I hear C? Yep, C is the answer, a new subnet. Because when deploying IPv6, we're going to be getting a whole host of new subnets that our domain controllers, if they're dual stack, they're running IPv4 and IPv6, are going to be seen on, and our clients are going to be seen on. We want to make sure that whenever we're having new subnets, whether they're IPv6 or IPv4 subnets showing up in our environment, that we reflect those new subnets in our Active Directory Sites and Services tool so that clients that are on one subnet or the other subnet have the appropriate site that they're able to determine. Yep, great. Okay, so we've gone through the first exam as part of our MCSE server infrastructure. Now we're on to the 414 exam, where we're implementing advanced scenarios with Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012. We've got four different objective domains in the second exam: managing and maintaining a server infrastructure, planning and implementing high availability in both a physical and virtual environment, planning and implementing server virtualization, and planning and implementing, designing and implementing identity and access solutions. So you'll notice that each of these four areas are roughly balanced to be about a quarter of the exam. However, as you look at these various objective domain areas, these two in the middle are heavily focused around enterprise infrastructure, virtualization, clustering, and high availability. So those are the two out of these four that I would spend the majority of your time on. That's where you're going to find a lot more value in studying the technical depth in preparation for the exam. So as we go through these, so one thing to keep in mind in the 414 exam is that, again, when we talk about virtualization or management or optimization, of the two exams, this one is much heavier on scenarios that involve System Center 2012. So you want to feel really comfortable with System Center 2012, particularly Virtual Machine Manager, and also feel really comfortable with Hyper-V from a base virtualization standpoint. So know the basics of network storage, virtual machines, and whatnot with Hyper-V. So as we step through this, for that first objective domain on managing and maintaining a server infrastructure, setting up an administrative model is part of that. And as we step through that process, we want to make sure that as we're thinking about the administrative model of our infrastructure, what we're really talking about is our server platform infrastructure, our physical and virtual hosts. So what they're getting at here is the delegation and roles that are part of System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012. So a lot of people, I bring that out because a lot of people look at this delegation of administrative access and they compare it back to the Active Directory delegation we talked about in the 413 exam. We're talking about delegation of two different areas of our overall infrastructure from that standpoint. Sure, sure. It is, yes. Exactly. So the question was, for System Center 2012, is that also the RTM release? For the purposes of the exams, it is the RTM release. You want to make sure that you, as you said, go back in your mind, toward, peel off the R2 and the SP1 features and go back to base level System Center RTM capabilities. Yep, definitely. As you're thinking about the other System Center components that are involved in managing and maintaining a server infrastructure, we also want to keep in mind Service Manager and Orchestrator. Now, for Service Manager and Orchestrator, those tools can get very complex very quickly. What I would focus on as you're studying is the functional levels, how Orchestrator works, what its purpose is. Go through the process of, with Orchestrator, knowing the process of creating a runbook, which Orchestrator uses to automate a set of sequences within a data center. But don't drill down into creating runbooks for particular server automation scenarios or things of that nature. So stay at a pretty high level from that standpoint. And the same thing is true from a service manager standpoint. For all of the other System Center components, I would have a base level functional understanding of what the overall components do and how they integrate with one another from a server infrastructure standpoint. In particular, a big area of this objective is around also using automated remediation. So that's where VMM and Orchestrator come into place, because what automated remediation gives your server infrastructure is the ability to detect issues that are occurring and be able to automatically try to resolve those issues. The monitoring strategy focuses around the base Windows Server tools for monitoring and managing your server environment, as well as System Center Ops Manager. So from an ops manager standpoint, that's the component within System Center 2012 that's most heavily geared around monitoring a large Windows or mixed network environment. By mixed, it could be Linux or Unix or whatnot as well that you're running in your network environment. So from a monitoring standpoint, understand how the basic ops manager components work, specifically looking at how alerting and notification works. That's really important, because what we're looking for is centralized monitoring, being able to monitor and then alert back to a centralized team when there's problems that are existing within the environment. From an updates infrastructure standpoint, this is talking about updates of both physical servers as well as virtualized servers. And there's really four different components here that you want to keep in mind as part of your studies. For for pushing out Windows updates to a collection of physical servers in a smaller environment. You could certainly use Windows Server Update Services, WSUS. But WSUS also integrates with some other System Center components. So for System Center Config Manager, System Center Config Manager can integrate with WSUS to automatically distribute updates in a large enterprise environment across physical or virtual machines. So if you're looking for large network, centralized, and automated patch management, System Center Config Manager would be where you'd want to go from that standpoint. On the flip side, if you're looking at being able to manage updates in a orchestrated manner, so a more of a manual administrative manner across all of your virtualization hosts, then System Center Virtual Machine Manager provides that capability. It integrates with WSUS as well, but instead of automatically pushing those updates out, it instead allows an administrator to provide a define a compliance baseline for updates for all of the hosts and then determine when to push those updates out from more of a manually maintained standpoint. And finally, if you're in a clustered environment of Server 2012 hosts and you're looking for automated updates, Server 2012 also includes a new cluster-aware updating feature that's built into Server 2012 clustering that can automatically distribute updates across the cluster, do updating one node at a time, making sure it's up to date, restarting it, waiting for it to come back online, moving to the next node. So you've got, although designing an updates infrastructure, a lot of people look at this and they say, oh yeah, I know WSUS, it's easy. Put a WSUS server at my central office, put some downstream WSUS servers in my branch offices. It's a lot more complex than just WSUS. You need to know WSUS, Config Manager, Software Update Points, Virtual Machine Manager, Update Servers, and Cluster Aware Updating as well. So those four key components. So implementing automated remediation then, when you see that set called out as implementing automated remediation, I would look to either Config Manager or the Cluster Aware Updating. From that standpoint, that's generally what they're going to be talking about in a larger environment. So let's take a look at a sample question. We're deploying a new web app to several servers that includes a custom registry key. This is kind of an interesting one because it's sort of updating as well as managing and maintaining the compliance of our systems. The solution must ensure the registry key was applied successfully. So we need an automated way of updating the registry key on our servers, as well as making sure that it was applied successfully and stays in compliance. So we've got four possible answers. We need to select the best answer. We've got Operations Manager, creating a monitor. GPMC, create a group policy object. Config Manager, create a compliance setting. Or Orchestrator, create a runbook. What do you guys think? It's the best answer. See? C is right. Config Manager, create compliance settings. Very good. So for planning and implementing a highly available infrastructure, what we want to focus on here is clustering and some of the new capabilities that are present in cluster shared volumes. So in Server 2012, we've got the ability to do cluster shared volumes and create some innovative scenarios around scale-out clusters where we have active-active file server clusters that are sharing up content. We also have the ability to support Hyper-V clustering as well. You want to understand both of those cluster scenarios around scale-out clusters as well as Hyper-V clusters for the exam. You also want to understand the basics of implementing a cluster. So if you haven't implemented clustering yet, step through that process. You can actually build out. It might sound difficult because you're thinking, geez, I don't have enough hardware to build out a lab environment to do clustering. You can actually build all of that out using virtual machines and using the iSCSI target in Server 2012. So you can build that out and test it at a guest level and do guest clustering to get a comfort level with that. The other area of high availability is for non-cluster aware applications. So web applications, other applications that maybe they're not cluster aware, or maybe you're looking for more than just a failover solution. You're looking to balance a large number of requests across a set of servers that aren't cluster aware. That's where network load balancing comes into place. So network load balancing, again, it's been included in Windows Server for the last few generations of that product, But you want to make sure that you understand the implementation process as well as creating using network load balancing for fault tolerance too. So if you have web applications, if you have application scenarios that are having applications that are non-cluster aware, those are great scenarios to think about from a network load balancing standpoint. We also want to keep in mind the specific availability requirements as it relates to particular roles. So we talked about Hyper-V and scale-out clustering. The other roles that I would look at is high availability of DHCP and high availability of DFS. Now, DHCP, we can use DHCP failover as well as clustering for. For DNS, or DFS rather, the DFS namespace server, to really get high availability of that, we're looking at the Active Directory integrated DFS or having a standalone DFS that's part of a cluster. So there's a couple different scenarios with DFS to keep in mind from that standpoint. So we've talked about high availability. The other key component of this is business continuity and disaster recovery. So you want to keep in mind, understand the process for recovering from Active Directory disasters using the restore mode capabilities of Active Directory. You also want to keep in mind that in Server 2012, we've got some new options. We've got the Active Directory Recycle Bin built into the Active Directory Administration Console as a GUI for recovering object-level deletions. And in Hyper-V in Server 2012, we've got support for site-to-site replication of VMs using Hyper-V Replica. So I would make sure you walk through the process of configuring Hyper-V Replica when preparing for this exam as well. So here's a sample question. We're planning to implement a couple Windows Server 2012 clusters, and we need to plan the application of automated Windows updates. We need to include that in our plans. So what should we include in our plans? Should we use System Center Config Manager, software update points? Should we use System Center Virtual Machine Manager with WSUS integration, cluster aware updating, or Windows Server Update Services? I heard C, cluster aware updating, and that's correct. Cluster aware updating because we said that we're planning to implement this on a cluster, and we're trying to do this in an automated fashion. So we want to make it completely automated across our cluster. Great. So last couple objectives. We're getting low on time here, so I'll run through them quickly. Again, the deck is available for you to download and review at your leisure. Planning and implementing virtualization hosts. So this goes through the process of understanding System Center Virtual Machine Manager, understanding how to build out your fabric in System Center Virtual Machine Manager to incorporate storage, networks, and virtual machine hosts, virtualization hosts. Now, System Center Virtual Machine Manager has the ability to bring in and manage VMware and Citrix virtualization hosts as well. I wouldn't worry so much about going deep on those capabilities. I would focus more squarely on Hyper-V hosts that you're managing through System Center Virtual Machine Manager. We also want to think about the guests as well, the virtual machines that we're deploying on top of those hosts, and specifically inside System Center Virtual Machine Manager, the ability to create a cloud, to create VMM templates for virtual machines and service applications, and then to apply resource optimization across our hosts and virtual machines. Virtual networking is also covered as part of this exam with System Center Virtual Machine Manager. And again, this is a big area. This is one area to put a red star on to make sure that you're only focusing on the RTM capabilities, because virtual networking with System Center 2012 made a huge leap forward with all kinds of additional features in Service Pack 1. None of those features are going to be included here. From a virtualization storage standpoint, we want to understand some of the storage options we have for placing virtual machines on our enterprise infrastructure. So using SMB over Hyper-V over SMB to have Hyper-V VMs running from shared folders on a Windows Server 2012 scale-out cluster, and also having locally attached cluster shared volumes. If we have a small cluster of Hyper-V hosts, we can use cluster shared volumes to expose that shared storage directly to the Hyper-V hosts. In addition, I would have a basic understanding of how this type of storage configuration would work, shared storage to Hyper-V hosts, in a traditional SAN environment, and how you can now take advantage of the new virtual fiber channel capabilities in Server 2012 to expose fiber channel worldwide names up to your virtual machines, how you can also do guest clustering with iSCSI. So if you're using iSCSI target server on Windows Server 2012, or if you have an iSCSI storage array, and pass-through disks, how pass-through disks can be leveraged to pass through an underlying storage LUN configuration into your virtual machines. We also want to understand the various options we have for live migration, so we can and VM migration in general. So we can do live migration of running VMs from host to host using Hyper-V Manager or System Center Virtual Machine Manager. We can also do quick migration from host to host where the virtual machines are paused. And we can do storage migration of just moving the storage that those virtual hard disks are running on. So understand how to use those various tools for each of those. So we've got one last sample question, and then we'll kind of wrap things up. So we're planning to deploy a new web app via service templates with network load balancing. So in System Center Virtual Machine Manager, we have the ability to create service templates for multi-tiered applications, like web applications. And in this case, we want to include load balancing as part of that configuration. So the question is, which component should be added to a System Center Virtual Machine Manager service template in order to support a load balancing configuration? So we've got A, guest OS profile, B, host profile, C, capability profile, and D, virtual IP template. So what do you guys think? D, you guys are good. Yep, D is the answer, virtual IP template. The last area, and I'll just quickly step through this so you have an understanding of each of these. So it's talking about identity management. And while identity management is core to Active Directory domain services, there's some other supporting services that a lot of environments haven't used around Active Directory. So you want to make sure that you walk through the process of building out Active Directory certificate services, building out the certificate services roles, and going through the process to request certificates. You also want to make sure that you go through the process of understanding Active Directory federation services to federate Active Directory to non-Active Directory authenticated applications. So this is a big area. A lot of people say, I'm never going to do this, but it's a big area that's growing in demand because of the movement that a lot of organizations are taking towards Office 365 or other cloud-based applications where they want to tie Active Directory authentication into those cloud-based applications. So having a solid understanding of Active Directory Federation services and the steps involved to design and deploy that is key here in this area. Rights management services is another area that it's not new with Windows Server 2012, but I find a lot of environments haven't spent the time to really invest in deploying. Rights management allows you to put digital rights management around documents that are being created and stored in your environment, regardless of if they're being stored on corporate file servers or external locations. You want to make sure that you walk through the process in the TechNet library for deploying rights management. There's a great step-by-step lab guide that you can follow through to build out a basic rights management infrastructure. So, sample question. We're planning to implement Active Directory certificate services for supporting certificate management for web app authentication. In this case, what is the minimum number of certificate servers you should plan to deploy? Does anybody have any guesses there? Two. We've got two as the minimum, and that's absolutely correct. If there's no other information given in the scenario, I would say two is always my minimum to start with. You want to have a CA root, and then you want to have an issuing certificate authority, a subordinate certificate authority that issues your certificates. Great. So we've walked through the exam objectives for 7413 and 414. We've gone through the process of giving you a feel for how some of the questions look. We've talked about some of the specific areas that you'll want to study. Now, out on my blog, there's a copy of this deck. I also have a set of study guides that you may want to take advantage of as you're going through this and other exams. You can go out to aka.ms /study guides. I've got step-by-step study guide materials that link out to a more granular set of resources as you're prepping for your MCSE server infrastructure exams. I appreciate your attendance today. Hopefully it was helpful in getting your mind straight for preparing for these exams. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain those questions, or Gary in the back can also help out with any questions regarding the certification tracks or paths or whatnot. Thanks so much for attending. Have a great rest of Tech Ed.